Stillman and Company is delivered by TriStar Moving, 1025, 1063. The game streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live. Thanks to Superbook Sports, live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Studios. I was in a great mood today when it came to the Titans because of some of the moves they've made. Now, today, to start the new league year, the Titans have tendered T.R. Tartt with a second-round tender, which I don't necessarily love. And then they tendered, which I understand, though. Fine with it. Then they tendered Aaron Brewer with a second-round tender for $4 million instead of the 2.6 right-of-first-refusal tender, which I do not understand, which makes me think that the Titans are content with Aaron Brewer starting at center. But before that, I was very, very happy because the Titans had gone out and they had addressed needs. Left tackle, they signed a left tackle, a guy who I've watched the coach's tape of two of his starts in Andre Dillard, and I can tell you he can play left tackle in the NFL. They signed the middle linebacker from the 49ers who wasn't Fred Warner or Dre Greenlaw, but was a capable middle linebacker to go next to Monty Rice. And middle linebacker is not a premium position. And then they signed Danny Brunskill, a right guard from San Francisco, and Arden Key, an outside backer or defensive end from Jacksonville who had played in San Francisco. Now, normally I have a problem when somebody comes in and says, okay, I want to bring back everybody I can from the team that I came from. Like Josh McDaniels saying, I don't want Derek Carr anymore. Let me go get a worse quarterback in Jimmy Garoppolo because I am comfortable with Jimmy Garoppolo. Let me sign Philip Dorsett because he played for me in New England. Let me sign Jacoby Myers because he played for me in New England. Guys I'm comfortable with. I don't necessarily like that. In fact, normally I hate it. I normally hate when a guy goes to a team and says, let me bring in my buddies. I hate that. Vrabel does that far too often with guys that he either coached at Ohio State or the Texans. And that's how you ended up with Jonathan Joseph. And that's how you ended up with Jadeveon Clowney and Jamarco Jones. And, you know, some of these just bums they've brought in over the years. And so I don't like it normally, which would make me very cautious about Rand Carthon bringing in his 49er guys. Except the difference is here. The reason why I like it is because I think Rand Carthon needs guys that can play Mike Vrabel-style football. And I think that might be the most important thing to Rand Carthon. In fact, he said that at the Combine, that he's got to figure out who is a Mike Vrabel player.
I'm stepping into a situation where a program has been established. There's a certain culture. There's a certain fit in how a player is supposed to look. So I'm learning that. You know, I'm learning that, and I'm going to learn what it takes to be a Titan and what that's going to look like. And so it'll be our job and the personnel staff to go get as many players that fit that particular bucket of that particular position group to allow us all to make the most educated decision.
And so because of that, I think that's the approach that he's taken, and he's bringing in guys that he know can play for Mike Vrabel. That it's not, you know, is Danny Brunskill, is he a good guard? It's not that. You can watch the tape and you can tell whether or not he's a good guard. But are his work habits, are those going to be Mike Vrabel approved? Arden Key. You know, we used to talk about how Mike Vrabel makes it pretty obvious when he hates a guy, and he hated Bud Dupree. You know, when Joe asked him after the Colts game about Bud Dupree's impact, and Mike Vrabel, who never talks about anybody's money or never talks about where somebody was drafted, talked about, when you're compensated like that, those are the expectations around here. I was like, damn, he hates Bud Dupree. And so they want to try to avoid that. And so when they bring in Arden Key, and he's played 17 games in each of the last 2 years, I know one of those years was with San Francisco. I know that what Rand Carthon's doing is he's saying, okay, I can either go out and get guys that I don't really know. Maybe I evaluated them coming out. Maybe I had a meeting with them, or we liked them in San Francisco, or maybe I know his college coach and his college coach tells me that he'll work up and down, but I don't really know that. And I have limited resources, and the guys I have to get have to be Mike Vrabel guys. You know, Tannehill and Henry and Burks and Okonkwo and Simmons and Byard and Autry, those guys, and Landry, those guys are going to be what defines our success. who we pick with the 11th overall pick will define our success. We just need to supplement those guys with guys that are going to come in and do things the Vrabel way. And the guys that he's worked with in San Francisco are guys that he knows probably can do things the Vrabel way. Because the one thing I'll tell you, coaching and playing for Mike Vrabel is not for everybody. I had somebody tell me at the Super Bowl, they said, when you coach for Mike Vrabel, it is a pain in your tush because he will get on you about everything. And that everything that you do as a coach, Vrabel will ask you, why are you doing this? Why are you doing this? Why are you doing this? Every time. And that if Vrabel thinks you're BSing him, he'll stay on you. And so I get it. Brant Carthon wants to know that the guys that he is bringing in can play ball for Mike Vrabel. And there's only one way to know, and that's to have been around these guys. Now, if Rand Carthon had come from San Francisco, let's say that they had fired both the coach and the general manager, and Rand Carthon had come in as the general manager, as the chief football executive of this team, and D'Amico Ryans was the head coach. So Rand comes in from San Francisco. He brings in a guy from San Francisco to be head coach. That guy is working for Rand, not working with Rand. And then Rand brings in all his buddies from San Francisco? No. He brings in all these players he's comfortable with? No. Every general manager, every coach is going to bring in people they know. That's just how it works. But you can't bring in everybody because the guys that the other teams are going to let you have are normally the guys that they absolutely positively don't want you to have. You know, I mean, they're not going to let you have Nick Bosa, and they're not going to let you have Deebo Samuel. But in this case, because they need role players, and role players are what's out there, and role players are what they got, I'm actually okay with it because I think that Rand Carthon saying, I know you can play Mike Vrabel ball. I know Azeez Al-Shaair can play Vrabel ball. I know Danny Brunskill at right guard, not a premium position, can play Vrabel ball. I know Arden Key, who's played 17 games in each of the last two seasons and is going to make $7 million a year and is joining the lineup with Tart and Autry and Simmons and Landry. I know he can play Vrabel ball, and he'll be on the field this season because in each of the last 2 years, he's played every game, including when we were in San Francisco. So in that instance, I'm okay with it. Normally, though, I hate it. Normally, I think it's kind of lazy. Like, I think that what Josh McDaniels is doing in Las Vegas is lazy. You know, Jacoby Myers, fine. Just trade out Darren Waller. You move off Derek Carr for Jimmy Garoppolo. I think that's lazy. In some cases, I think it's the right fit. Like, in my theory with the Colts, if they end up drafting Anthony Richardson, which was to Shane Steichen, the former Eagles offensive coordinator, bring in Gardner Minshew and run Jalen Hurts' system. That I'm fine with because you know you don't have to teach it to Minshew. But for the most part, when the guy leaves and brings in all his former players, I don't like that. But I do understand, or at least I think I understand, why Rand Carthon's doing what he's doing. Phone lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. 615-737-1025. Dylan is in Antioch and has been waiting patiently. What's up, Dylan?
Hey, Jared. Okay, I got a kind of crazy draft scenario, so just roll with me here. Have you seen these reports that Jalen Carter showed up fat, finishes drills? You know, he's got all the issues going on with the drag racing and all that stuff. If there's any scenario, and I know you said best player available, if there's any scenario he falls to 11, you're Rand Carthon, you're sitting there, do you take him, yes or no? I'll hang up the mic.
Yes. I mean, I've already – thank you for your call. We went over this last week about researching the Jalen Carter thing and saying, okay – you know, what we know at this point in time, if he's on that board, when Paris Johnson's on that board, would we take Jalen Carter? And I said yes. You know, it was me and Ian sitting there trying to work through the decision. And I said yes. Now, I did not see this Jalen Carter fat and out of shape at Pro Day. Apparently ESPN has this. The headline says, Georgia defensive tackle Jalen Carter heavier and struggles at Pro Day. Georgia defensive tackle, and I'm reading from the ESPN.com article, Georgia defensive tackle Jalen Carter was 9 pounds heavier than he was at the combine about 2 weeks ago and couldn't finish his position drills at Georgia's Pro Day Wednesday. Woof! 9 pounds in 2 weeks? What you been eating? 9 pounds. Good God. Carter, who was once considered a potential number one pick in April's draft, weighed 323 pounds at pro day. We might want to put him on the offensive line for the Titans. 323 pounds at pro day. He opted to do only position drills and didn't participate in other aspects of the workout, including the 40-yard dash, cone drills, and other physical tests. Carter didn't finish the positional drills because he was cramping up and breathing heavily. Carter worked out in front of scouts and coaches from all 32 teams in Georgia's indoor facility. Three head coaches, Arthur Smith, Matt Eberflus, and Mike Tomlin, were in attendance. Carter, 6'3", also didn't work out in front of scouts at the Combine on March 2nd. He was only measured and had interviews with NFL teams. Carter didn't speak to reporters in Athens on Wednesday after missing his media session at the Combine. Boy, I tell you, 9 pounds in 2 weeks. Now, I understand these guys are so big that they'll lose like 13 pounds in a practice, you know, when they're out there in July. But 9 pounds in 2 weeks, what you eating at 9 pounds in 2 weeks? That is a red flag, not to mention the other red flag that Jalen Carter has. 615-737-1025. More of your phones on the Titans. 615-737-1025 here on the program. Stillman and Company, 1025-1063, the game.
What do you make of what Rand Carthon and Mike Vrabel have done to this point in free agency?
Well, I think it's kind of the pattern I would have expected. The 49ers links make sense. And you've got some guys here. I wouldn't call them value bins, but, you know, I think in Al Shaier, in Brunskill, and in Dillard, you've got guys. Brunskill obviously started a lot of games for 2 years, but last year, you know, he only started two games, and he's looked at by 49ers people as the ultimate utility guy. Dillard, obviously, you know, was never a full-time guy. Al Shaier also was, you know, kind of a role player and a special teamer. So these guys, we haven't seen all the contract details. I wish, for God's sake, people would listen and stop saying $29 million for Dillard, but they won't wait to see the contract. And it's going to wind up being cheaper than that on paper. But these three guys all have upside.
There you go. That was Paul Kaharsky earlier today on Robbie and Rex Road. And let me just put my hand in the air and say guilty as charged that I had a panic when I saw $29 million for Andre Dillard. I know better than that. I know that when there's no guarantee that's reported, I know that it's kind of a fake number. I mean, the number for Azeez Al-Shaair was put out there today at up to $6 million. And you know what up to $6 million means? Not $6 million. And there's been, you know, Arden Key, when they signed him yesterday, it was, I think, what, 3 years, $27 million. 22, you know, 19 guaranteed, whatever it ended up being. Like, they gave you the guaranteed number right there. They told you what the deal was when it happened. Why? Because that's not a bad deal. They want you to know that. And to this point, we still don't have how much money the Al Shaier deal actually is, and we don't have how much money the Dillard deal actually is. Now, I'm still mad about Aaron Brewer because we know exactly how much money that is. $4 million on a second-round tender. And I saw people, by the way, sending in to TD on Twitter that are like, you know, oh, maybe we could lose Brewer for a second-round pick. Nobody is signing Aaron Brewer and giving you their second-round pick. Think about this. If you had offered Aaron Brewer for a second-round pick at the trade deadline last year, would anybody have done it? The answer is no. You're also not going to lose Tyrann Tartt because nobody is going to give you a second-round pick to sign Tyrann Tartt. It's just not going to happen. Tyrann Tartt's a solid player. He's not a second-round pick kind of player. And Aaron Brewer, I mean, your option was the $2.6 million right of first refusal or the $4 million second-round tender, and they chose the $4 million second-round tender, which I cannot get over. With that, we go to your phones here on the program. James in Ashland City has been waiting patiently. He's up next. What's up, James?
Hey, Jared, I just wanted to point out something that you already know anyway, but you had to mention it. Talking about Rand Carthon and other GMs going, being a little lazy, going with what they know and who they are. You got to remember one thing. It's in their human DNA to be very tribal. I think if you put it in that context, like I'm in the fine dining restaurant business, and I first met you at Jeff Ruby's when I got hired on there when the GM was still with us. And sure. I didn't get hired there because I knew the owners. I got hired because I had a relationship with other servers that vouched for me. And so it's that way in your business too. So I'm just bringing that up because we are very tribal. It's in our DNA, and we go with what's comfortable. But you're right about one thing. You know, sometimes it's good to step out of that comfort zone, and we'll know whether Rand Carthon's decisions of bringing these people he's had relationships with is going to work or not. But that's what I wanted to just remind you about that. Thanks for taking my call.
No, I agree with you. I'll say this, though, about my business. I think we hire some freaking bums in this business. I mean, I think there are people that get hired that don't have an ounce of talent. And they get hired because, to your point, they have a good relationship. So that's not actually, in this instance, to me, that is not something that I think is a positive here. In fact, I think it's very much negative, right? It's the, I know him and I believe in him. And I'm like, but he sucks. And I can't tell you how many people in this industry get put on the radio that freaking don't have 1 ounce of talent in them. I mean, it is embarrassing to me. Like, it embarrasses me sometimes they'll put people on the radio, and sometimes success in radio can be defined in a lot of different ways. And so they'll put people on the radio that, you know, walk in to, you know, a huge audience or have an unbelievable setup or whatever it may be. They have a little bit of success that somebody with some actual talent would have had, you know, much better success. And it's almost like it's justification for this terrible performance that is being put on. And I think sometimes maybe we see that a little bit in football too, like with coaches and certain other things where it's like, you know, I understand there's kind of two sides to this. On one side of it, it is, I am very comfortable risking my reputation and my career on this person because I know this person. It's not some agent telling me, oh yeah, Johnny will fit in perfectly with what Mike Vrabel wants to do. Johnny will be a great radio host. Just trust me. And that can be sometimes you meet with somebody for an hour. How are you going to be able to judge whether or not that person is going to be, you know, what you need them to be? And with Vrabel as the coach, you're going to need guys that have a certain personality trait. On the other side of it, though, I think a lot of times, like I said, it can be kind of lazy. It can be kind of a, oh, I know he'll do a good job, and you just want him to do a good job because you like him or her. So you hire them, or you make them an assistant coach, or you bring them to your team because you like them, but deep down inside, this person's no good. And, I mean, I kind of think that that's how David Poyle got talked into John Hines, right? John Hines was the head coach in New Jersey. Ray Shero and Tom Fitzgerald fired him. Ray Shero was an assistant general manager with the Predators. Tom Fitzgerald was a former player, former captain of the Predators. And they told David Poyle, swore up and down, John Hines was a great coach. And so then David Poyle, you know, really didn't interview anybody else from what I'm told, and just thought, oh, these guys say that John's going to be great, so let's hire him. And, like, obviously, no disrespect to John, and the team's playing well right now, and they're playing hard, and I like that. But, you know, John Hines is not a great coach. No, he is what he is. And I would have liked it if the Predators had gone about finding a new coach with maybe a little bit more of a thorough search or somebody that had a little bit more of a resume. And I guess it's my long-winded way of saying, I get it, relationships dictate a lot of what we do in society. But I'll just put it to you like this. When the Jared and the GM program ended, I was by myself. And we could have hired somebody locally, or we could have hired somebody with a lot of experience. I mean, we could have gone any direction that we wanted to go. And I was like, you know what? I can do a show by myself. Let's take some time and let's go through the process and let's find somebody who really stands out to us. And I told Ryan Porth that. And I told Porth, I said, you know, I'm kind of looking to go, you know, where it's a solo host with a sidekick like a Colin Cowherd anyways. But again, let's look for the right person, not, oh my God, what are we going to do? Because 99% of the time in radio, they just throw somebody on the air in like an interim position, and then that interim position just becomes a permanent position. And so I was like, let's find the right person. And so it was Caroline's resume that stood out to Ryan, and Ryan called Fitz, who knew Caroline, and then he met with Caroline, and then I met with Caroline, and then Caroline came in town, and then she met with everybody, and then we met with Caroline again, and then we hired Carol. Like, we went through a like long, extensive process in hiring somebody that we didn't know. But we knew after really researching it, we knew she was the right fit for what we were looking to do. And I think that Caroline has been a success story in the process of going with somebody that we were not comfortable with from the standpoint of we didn't know her. She hadn't worked with any of us, but we went through the process and we knew what we were looking for and we laid it out and everything else. Sometimes I think when you just hire somebody you know, sometimes I think it's lazy. Boy, that was a long-winded way of saying Rand Carthon bringing in all his 49er buddies I'm not a huge fan of, except of. In this case, I think it's more so, who does he know that fits what they're looking for in roles, like supporting roles for role players? Brunskill's a role player. Aziz Alshire is a role player. You know, that I think's right, that he knows can play Vrabel ball. And so that I'm okay with. But deep down inside, if you get, like what Josh McDaniels is doing with the Raiders, I am not interested in that. I am not interested in, let's get rid of the quarterback and bring in my guy. Let's get rid of the tight end and bring in my guy. Let's get rid of all the good players and bring in guys that I've worked with. I am not interested in that. I think that is so stupid. And I think McDaniels is going to pay the price for it. 615-737-1025 is our phone number, 615-737-1025 here on the program. The teams have been selected for the college basketball tournament, so that means it's time for you to sign up and play the official Game Bracket Challenge brought to you by Twin Peaks, home of 29-degree drafts and wall-to-wall sports. Go to thegamenashville.com/bracketchallenge or the Game Nashville app now and pick your teams for a chance to win tickets to see Luke Combs at Nissan Stadium on Saturday, April 15th. Stillman and Company, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
I'll say this as an outsider, and that's I'll never be more than that when it comes to this. But if someone asks us on the air to describe a Titan, for me, I always say it starts with a level of toughness that's visible. It can't be just talent. It can't just be speed. There's those guys, when you watch the Titans, there's something physical going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, and again, what you just described is who?
Mike Vrabel. And you.
There you go. That was Rand Carthon at the Combine. And so, you know, again, they're trying to sign tough guys, and they're trying to sign the right guys and Titan guys. And so ESPN, their analytic people, they're giving grades for these free agent signings. And like I said, you know, I got the Andre Dillard signing, fine with it. I like the Danny Brunskill signing because, again, he's versatile and he can start at guard. And I just want to not worry about the guard. Now, I'm fine with that. I was fine with the Aziz Alshire. You know, I was fine with that one. You know, TD really, really liked it. And TD, you know, I think was watching the film when he was texting me about why he liked it. But I'm fine with that. But the deal I liked the Arden Key deal. I thought it was a great fit. The guy plays 17 games a season each of the last 2 years. Rand Carthon knows that he can play Mike Vrabel ball because he's had him in San Francisco. And Arden Key is not going to expect, you know, we're not going to expect Arden Key to be the middle of the lineup batter for that defensive line. That's Simmons. We're not even going to expect him to be the guy who protects the middle of the lineup bat. That's going to be Autry. And so with Landry coming back, with Weaver having the season he had, with Tart coming back, and with adding him into the mix where Arden Key plays 17 games, Bud Dupree does not, I freaking loved that signing by the Titans. But I wanted to see what the ESPN analytic people thought of this Arden Key signing. I wanted to see if I was just some local Bobo that saw that signing yesterday and thought, that is a great signing, or if, you know, maybe I should be a little bit more skeptical. They gave him an A-. And they have been kind of tough. ESPN's analytic people have been kind of tough on some of these signings. So A- is pretty good. ESPN writes, quote, "The Titans just landed some serious pass rushing upside. Key did not play enough with the Jags last season to qualify for ESPN's rush win rate leaderboard," which, by the way, is me interjecting here, something I hate. "But," as Seth Waldler writes, "if he had, he would have ranked sixth at edge rusher. His 24% pass rush win rate at edge was a tenth of a percentage point ahead of Von Miller, plus he had 4.5 sacks. Now, it's not a huge sample size," he writes, "but his 2022 win rate was definitely the best of his career, but those are solid numbers. It could have been a sign of great things to come. Even though the Titans are seemingly in a rebuild," which I don't agree with, "this is still exactly the kind of bet I'd want to make in free agency." I'm just telling you, he's batting fifth in the order. Landry bats second. Simmons bats third. Autry bats fourth. He's my cleanup hitter. And then I got Arden Key. And that's without Tier Tart, who's somewhere in the lineup, and Weaver and all the other guys. And if you don't have the quarterback, the second most important thing is get to the quarterback. Jason Fitz joins us now, ESPN Radio, as he always does on the program. Fitz, let's start with this, which is, it is inevitable that Aaron Rodgers is going to the Jets. That being said, I am not convinced that the Jets are going to compete for the Super Bowl. I'm also not convinced that Buffalo's in as great of a spot as everybody assumes. Maybe Miami sneaks in there a little bit. All three of them have been loading up, it feels like. What do you make of that?
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that, you know, Aaron Rodgers makes the Jets better. Does he make them the Super Bowl favorite? Not for me. Like, if I was putting money on one team to go to the Super Bowl from the AFC next year, it'd still be Kansas City. I don't know that I necessarily share the Buffalo's down aspect of it. It was not a great year for Josh Allen last year, but they still went 13-3, right? So they still win football games. Everything that could go wrong for them last year did go wrong, and they still put themselves in a situation where, frankly, it was a disappointment that they didn't go to the Super Bowl. So I feel like the Bills still are my favorite in there. But for me, you're paying a ton of money for Aaron Rodgers to get you to the wild card conversation. Now, in the AFC, you will not win the AFC unless you have a great quarterback. They have a great quarterback now. He's got to play like it. There's still a lot of things that got to come together. So they'll have a fighter's chance. But I'm not suddenly running out betting my house on Aaron Rodgers and the Jets to do what Aaron Rodgers and the Packers didn't do year in and year out, which is win a Super Bowl.
Fitz, what deal do you really like so far throughout free agency?
I'm not just saying this because you were just saying it, but I'm telling you, Arden Key is a great signing by the Titans. I really love everything about Arden Key. I obviously was a fan of watching him with the Raiders. The Raiders never used him well. He went to San Francisco. When he was in a better situation on that defensive line in San Francisco, he was a much different player. I feel like Arden Key is somebody that can be a special player, so I really like Arden Key as the signing. I think Javon Hargrave was a interesting signing of let's make our strengths stronger. So that stands out to me. I think, frankly, so far we saw offensive linemen get wildly overpaid, and we see a lot of hesitance to pay big money to really good wide receivers. It's been an interesting so far free agency in my mind. We've been so obsessed with the two quarterbacks. We haven't talked about it, but it has been interesting. I frankly would never have given McGlinchey the kind of money that he got, for example, on the open market.
So with that, let's move the Raiders to the side for a second, because we will get to them. Which free agent deal do you not like?
The big money to McGlinchey, the Broncos in general, I think, are spending a ton of money at okay. And that just doesn't win. At some point, that is not a great concept. Oh, in the deals I like, Jesse Bates, by the way, to the Falcons. Good deal by him. I think the Falcons are doing a nice job of spending money smartly. I feel like even the Bears are being pretty smart here. I know Sean Payton comes in and gets all the benefit of the doubt in the world, but I think they overpaid for a couple of offensive linemen that are in the category of pretty good and not worth the amount of money they got.
Jason Fitz is our guest, ESPN Radio. What the hell are the Raiders doing, Fitz? I mean, I think that just being honest, I think that Carr is better than Garoppolo. I'd rather have Waller than Myers. It just feels like Josh McDaniels is reverting to comfort and bringing in all his Patriot buddies. And he's not bringing in Tom Brady, and that is not going to get you past Patrick Mahomes or Justin Herbert. Your thoughts?
Yeah, so the Raiders are in rebuild mode, and I think they've been pretty honest about that. If you read some of what their GM and front office have said at the combine, they made it clear that they don't think that their roster is anywhere near where it needs to be competitive with Kansas City. I've talked to somebody in the organization that told me 2 weeks ago that they think they are 16 starters away. 16 starters. You don't get that one off season. So they're going through a 2-year process. The problem is you don't want to just completely tank if you're the Raiders. You can't survive in Vegas with Mark Davis if you completely tank. So you want to do a little bit of winning and you want to do a lot of drafting well. That's what I think they're trying to do. So they accumulate another draft pick. Darren Waller, when he's healthy, is a really good player. There's no doubt about that. He and that organization didn't mesh from the outset. Even after he got paid, it didn't mesh. They didn't like each other personally, and I think you finally just saw where everybody said, let's just move on. So, you know, I think the Giants have a chance to get somebody if he's healthy. They can be a difference maker, but the Raiders, make no bones about it. They are not even – if they contend this year, it's an accident. I think everybody is up to be shocked, and they are going to start a massive – they already started a massive rebuild.
So what do you think could be on the table for Devontae then? Because I can tell you right now, I don't think Devontae wants to be part of a rebuild.
Yeah, I think Devontae, if the right offer came around, I think they'd listen to that. They'll know in the next 2 days on Hunter Renfrow. Hunter Renfrow has a ton of money guaranteed on Friday. If he's still with the team on Friday, then they go into a situation. I still think the Raiders are going to try and draft a rookie quarterback. They would love to have Devontae and Hunter Renfrow there and Jacoby there to help them, frankly, communicate and help that young quarterback develop. What they want to do is get their favorite quarterback with no pressure to put him on the field. So I think the Raiders have shown you that they're squarely in on either Will Levis or Anthony Richardson. They'll take one of those guys. They'll slow develop them with a really good set of weapons, and they'll hope that that helps that quarterback be much better next year than they can be this year. And they're basically going to tell Devontae has an out in his contract in 2 years. So for the next 2 years, he's kind of stuck where he is. I think they'll try and make the most of it, but I think the Raiders are a 5 or 6 win team if everything breaks right, and they're okay with that because the year after that, they think they can make a push for the playoffs.
So they're going to have to move up. Jason Fitz is with us. They're going to have to move up to 3 if they want to draft a quarterback in this year's class, which is not going to be easy given what Carolina just used to go from 9-1. Now, obviously going from 7-3 is not the same as 9-1, but I don't see Devontae Adams being interested in sticking around for a rebuild for 2 years. And I see the Titans, for instance, who just traded away A.J. Brown. I could really see them using Devontae Adams. I mean, what do you think that if the Titans picked up the phone and they called the Raiders and they said, look, we know you're drafting Will Levis. We know you're going to trade your first this year and your first next year in order to move up from 7-3 so that you can take Levis. We want Devontae. What do you think the Raiders would ask for in exchange for Devontae Adams?
First round pick. I think they want a first. I mean, they gave up a first and a second. They want a first round pick back for him. It's a tough proposition for them, by the way. If they trade him, that does result in a pretty huge escalation on their salary cap. They don't have a ton of wiggle room. They've already restructured most of the people they can restructure this
year. Cap's fake.
So it's difficult. They don't have a lot of funny money they can figure out a way to move around. So unfortunately, they moved most of the money they can move or they're willing to move. So I don't know that they can get a ton done with that, but you're 1,000% right in everything you said. Also, though, Dan Graziano reported on Get Up when the trade went down for the top overall pick that the Raiders were prepared to make the same offer to the Bears minus the player. They weren't prepared to give up a player of the caliber of DJ Moore to make that deal happen. So that tells you that the Raiders wanted the top pick to take their quarterback, and they wanted to team that quarterback with Devontae Adams because they weren't prepared to put him up in that trade. So I don't think the Raiders are going to trade Devontae, but for the right deal, I think they would. So,
would you take my 2024 first round pick?
I would. Yeah. I mean, I think they're in complete rebuild mode. Why not? But I think, especially because I think they're going to have to give that pick up in order to move up to number 3. I think Arizona on draft day is going to get a king's ransom for somebody to move up to 3. Because if your favorite flavor is still sitting there at 3, if you from the outset were a Will Levis guy, and all of a sudden C.J. Stroud and Bryce Young go 1-2. Man, if you're a Will Levis guy, you're going to pay whatever it takes to move up from 7-3 to get him. If you're an Anthony Richardson guy, you're going to pay whatever it takes. If somehow Bryce Young falls that far, you're going to pay whatever it takes.
Fitz is with us here on the program. So I do agree with you. I think it's going to be quarterback 1, 2, 3, 4. Give me your order for what you think the quarterbacks are going to go in this year's class.
Yeah, I think C.J. Stroud's going to go first overall, not because he's the best, but because he's the most capable of playing right now. You have the least question marks about him when he comes in today That means Bryce Young goes number two because I don't think Houston's interested in a developmental prospect. So then you have three and four. I honestly believe at this point, I would take Will Levis three, Anthony Richardson four if it were me. I think most teams have that flopped. And the reason is, frankly, if you're going to draft for traits and you're going to draft for I need time to fix this guy anyway, then you draft for the guy that has the best traits. And Anthony Richardson, according to everybody I talked to that's smarter than me, apparently has a higher ceiling than Will Levis. So I think it's going to end up going C.J. Stroud, Bryce Young, Anthony Richardson, Will Levis.
Although if I were the Colts, I'd be so upset about that. Because the Colts, my plan for the Colts, sign Gardner Minshew, draft Anthony Richardson, and say, you know, Gardner Minshew's our quarterback, and put in Jalen Hurts' offense, and after a year, put in Anthony Richardson to run Jalen Hurts' offense.
I don't think your plan is that far off. And by the way, as a fan of a team that's going to end up, I think, with one of these quarterbacks, I've said for weeks, I don't want Will Levis, I don't want Anthony Richardson. The minute the Raiders sign Jimmy G, I don't care. Give me whichever guy you think is best now. I don't need him to play for a year at least. So if he's not going to see the field for a year, then give me whoever you think over the course of that year you can make the best quarterback out of all four of them. So I think there has to be a plan for whoever takes Anthony Richardson or Will Levis that protects that player for at least one season. And if you do that, all bets are off on who's the best and who's the worst at that point.
Jason Fitz, ESPN Radio, as always, joining us on the program. Fitz, great stuff. Appreciate it. We'll yell about Lamar Jackson next week.
Oh, I can't wait. By then, I'll be right. Appreciate you, brother.
There you go. Jason Fitz, ESPN Radio, joining us on the program. Devontae for next year's one. So all of a sudden, just throwing this out there right now, just saying, Dillard, no left guard right now, Brewer at center, which you know I hate at $4 million, Brunskill at right guard, Petit Ferrer at right tackle, Treylon Burks at wide receiver, Devontae at the other wide receiver, Chigakonkwo at tight end, Derrick Henry, Ryan Tannehill. With that defensive line, next year's first round pick, I'm just saying. 615-737-1025 is our phone number, 615-737-1025. Let me tell you about FanDuel Sportsbook. FanDuel Sportsbook is my official sportsbook app. That's right. They want to get you set for the tournament, and I am here for that as well. FanDuel, of course, is my official sportsbook app. And this March, take a shot at college hoops with a no-sweat bet on FanDuel. It doesn't matter if you're new to FanDuel or if you already have an account, because right now all customers can tip off the tourney with a no-sweat bet. Just sign into your FanDuel sportsbook account to claim yours today. Or if you're new to FanDuel, go to FanDuel.com/JGM to get in on all the action. Then you can bet on everything from the money line to point spreads to that 5 versus 12. And I am telling you, I am a big fan this year of Duke's team. Just telling you, Final Four futures, championship futures. I'm just saying, that's right. All in an app that's safe, secure, and super easy to use. There's no better place to bet the tournament than on FanDuel Sportsbook. Go to FanDuel.com/JGM to join now or sign into your FanDuel Sportsbook account to claim your no-sweat bet today. Make every moment more with FanDuel. 21 and older and present in Tennessee. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Max bonus $5 unless otherwise specified. Restrictions do apply. See full terms at FanDuel.com/Sportsbook. Gambling problem? Call the Tennessee Red Line at 1-800-889-9789.
Yeah, a significant development for the New Orleans Saints. There's been a lot of discussion over the last several months about Michael Thomas leaving his contract. They tinkered with it before the start of the league year, but I am told they have now reached an agreement for Michael Thomas to come back to New Orleans on a reworked one-year deal, incentive-laden deal, about $10 million. He can get $15 million at its max, and Michael Thomas, really one of the best receivers in the NFL when healthy. He showed that early on in last year, then unfortunately was injured again. He actually had been recruiting Derek Carr to come be the Saints quarterback, and then Carr signed, and then he was recruiting Michael Thomas to stay on a reworked contract. This one always made sense. Michael Thomas now back to New Orleans. It's not a signing, but it feels like it's bigger one for the Saints.
There you go. Michael Thomas is staying with the Saints. Now, I love this. Every time I bring this up, I get people who have regular jobs and don't do this for a living that'll text in the text line about how the cap is real. And every year, the New Orleans Saints are $11 trillion over the cap, and then they restructure a bunch of contracts, and then they go out and they sign a quarterback for $37.5 million. But the reason that I bring up the Michael Thomas deal. I don't care that Michael Thomas is going back to the Saints. Michael Thomas hadn't been good for 3 or 4 years. That's not interesting. I don't care about that. The reason I bring up the Michael Thomas thing is because a month and a half ago, Joe Rexrode went on a crusade, and Joe will join us in just a bit for Jared versus Joe, but Joe Rexrode went on a crusade to prove to me that the salary cap was real. So much so that he had every guest on and asked him about the salary cap being real, including former NFL agent Joel Corey, who now works for CBS. Now, Joel is a very, very smart guy. But listen to Joel's example of how the salary cap is for sure real.
Joel, you just went through what the Titans could do, you know, with Ryan Tannehill's deal. And certainly it's something that teams do quite a bit in this league to manipulate things with the cap. But if someone were just getting into this sport and asked you, Joel, is the NFL salary cap real? What would you say to that person?
Yeah, it's real, but it can be manipulated. If it wasn't real, then the Rams would have been able to bring back everybody they wanted to last year. Von Miller would still be there and so forth. You have to eventually make judicious choices, although you can do like the Saints and restructure every contract known to man time, and then the bill is eventually going to become due like it is for them this year, which is why they did a creative move with Michael Thomas's contract to ensure that he's going to get cut sometime before the fifth day of the 2023 league year on March 19th.
Oh, is that right? So that's how we know that the cap is real, because, you know, eventually the bill's going to come due for the Saints like this year. Yeah, what have the Saints done? Oh, they signed a quarterback for $37.5 million. And that Michael Thomas, you said, oh, yeah, they're going to have to cut Michael Thomas because the bill. No, they're going to keep him. It's fake. He brought up the Rams about how the Rams would have been able to bring everybody back. They just didn't want to give Von Miller $120 million. Von Miller got on the plane, went to Buffalo, and said that he thought he was going to get off the plane and he was going to write the Bills a check for the private jet that they sent him out in to say, sorry, but I'm going back to L.A. It wasn't the cap. It was they gave Von Miller a deal he couldn't say no to. The Rams don't have cap problems. The Rams' problems are that their quarterback is old and broken down, their left tackle retired, and they've traded away all their draft picks. That's their problem. It's not the cap. The cap's fake. The Saints are walking proof that the cap is fake. And every year, last year, they were $90 million over the cap or whatever it was. They didn't release a single player. And then they went after Deshaun Watson. And people say, well, you know, but they didn't get Deshaun Watson. This year, they kicked the can down the road. Joel Corey, oh, yeah, it's real. That's why the Saints are, you know, kick it down, and now it's going to come due, and they'll have to cut Michael Thomas. Guess what? They're not cutting Michael Thomas. And guess what? They probably should cut Michael Thomas because he never plays anymore. So I'm not going to do this every day because I'm honestly tired of arguing with people that do not do this for a living, that do not do this every day, and do not watch all these moves that these teams make. But the salary cap is not real. The budgets that the teams have are real. Like San Francisco has a budget. It's not a cap, and it's not the cap, but they have a budget. Yesterday, they restructured Fred Warner's contract. What does that mean? They give Fred Warner his money for this year up front. He's not taking a pay cut. They give him his money for the year up front, and then Fred Warner's cap number goes down. The Dolphins gave Jalen Ramsey a new contract. They gave him $30 million more dollars guaranteed, and his cap number went down $13 million because the cap is fake. It's completely and totally fake, and you've been lied to your entire life about the cap. Every team can spend over the cap. Every team can get any player they want to get because the cap is not real. And so when people say it can be manipulated, that's their way of saying it's not real, because it's not. Cap decisions are not made. Money decisions are made. When you look at a guy, if you owned a team and you had a budget of $250 million or whatever it is, and you had your $250 million budget, and you had a guy making $20 million, and he sucked, you wouldn't want to pay him that $20 million either. I wouldn't want to pay Bud Dupree, not because of the cap, but because Bud Dupree never plays. I don't want to give him the money. That's why. It's amazing. Somebody texted in yesterday, and they said, the cap's real, but if you go over, there are ramifications for that. No, it's not. No team is over the cap, period. No team in the NFL is allowed to go over the cap. That's basketball, where there are ramifications if you go over the cap. That's baseball, where there are like real consequences. If you go over the luxury tax, you lose draft picks. You lose bonus pool money in baseball. Like, that's real. You lose important stuff in baseball. There is no problem. You cannot go over the cap in football, but you can just change contracts however you want in order to technically be under the cap, but there is no cap on cash spent. It is fake. And so I'm not going to do this every day, and I'm not even going to do this with Joe coming up now because he'll never learn, but it's not real. The cap doesn't matter. The budget that your owner has set does matter. And for the Titans, it really matters because the Titans are not the richest owners in the NFL. But as far as the cap and cap space, I never give a rat's ass about it anymore because it doesn't matter, because it's fake. There you go. 615-737-1025. Joe Rexroad joins us to debate Jared versus Joe. That's next. Stillman and Company, 1025, 106 with the game.